You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, June 29th, episode 3984 by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse world. Well, Jamie is on her way back from what looked like a very successful weekend at Monty's Place, and she'll be back here on Wednesday for a brand new episode. I thought we would start this episode by answering a few emails that came in. I've been piling them up and thought, well, I'll do that on one of the days when Jamie's not here. And then later in the show, I am going to play an interview that we did last year or the year before on managing summer heat. With half the country hotter than us in Florida this week, I thought the timing was good to replay Dr. Janice Holland on managing summer heat with your horses. And what a weekend we had between earthquakes, floods, fires, and extreme heat. Be safe out there, people. Well, let's do some birthdays first and then get to the emails.
From the podcast to the barn. Here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm.
Well, happy birthday to auditors Taylor L. and host of the Equine Affair episode, Allison. Happy birthday to you both. Well, a reminder that on July the 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we're doing a listener Zoom for our 4,000th episode. I'll put a link to the invite in the show notes of the Facebook event so that it'll remind you when it's coming up to that time. But we'd love to have you join us on July the 19th at 8 p.m. That will be a recording for our 4,000th episode, and we get to hang out with you guys. We're so excited about that. All right, on to the emails. Claire wrote, "You guys are always saying what you do isn't important. I want you to know it is, and your show has gotten me through some really tough times." I think this references, I know I did it again last week, where I was on with Ashley, and we had one of our listeners on, and she has this very important job about working in a lab and helping develop things that help save lives. And, you know, we joke about the fact that what we do is kind of silly, and our listeners have all these important jobs that actually mean something. We realize what we do helps get you through the day. We've gotten so many emails over the years, hundreds of them, that, you know, people have gone through divorces or, you know, cancer or all kinds of things in their lives, lost people, lost horses, stuff like that. And they came to us just to forget about life for a little bit. We know what we do is important. We joke about it all the time because, I mean, let's be honest, we do feel a little bit inferior sometimes when we talk to these really smart people, especially our listeners who have these great jobs and are doctors and scientists and all these kind of things. So, you know, we joke about it, but we do realize that what we do is important or we wouldn't keep doing it. So thank you, Claire, for your email. We do realize that part of it's the shtick of the show we do, and we say those things, but we enjoy being here and we enjoy entertaining, and we hope that our silliness, which it is a little bit of silliness, let's be honest. We do weird news and really bad ads. Just helps you laugh and have a chuckle in your day. And that's all we could hope for doing this show, that we hope to help you get through the day a little bit easier. Well, Lisa wrote, "I give you guys a lot of credit. I tried podcasting. It was a lot more work than I thought. I quit after 10 episodes. Well, you made it 3 more than the average. And I'm not sure how you've done it for this long. Well, you know, I get asked this a lot. It's probably the most asked question I get when I'm doing podcasting events. When I'm speaking at podcasting events. I got it again last week when I spoke at one. How do we do it this long? How do we keep going for 4,000 episodes? Well, one thing is my stock answer to other podcasters is you just do one episode at a time. You're just always looking at the next episode and always doing the next episode. It is, you know, 10 to 12 hours of pre and post recording time that we put into each episode when you consider everything from booking guests to marketing and all that stuff, advertisers and all of that. It just takes time. Jamie and I have been doing this a very long time, as you know, and we like like getting together, and it really is therapy, and I think more so for her, for sure. And where else do we get to talk about our silly lives than on the air? So, and you know, I always tell other podcasters too, I said, the mic part, this part, the part I'm doing right now is the fun part. Everything else is kind of a job. You know, we have things we have to do. We have all of the administrative stuff we have to handle, the advertising, all of that. Now, a lot of that's onto Ashley's shoulders now, so it's a little more fun for me. But this is the really fun part. Talking on the mic to each other, that's the part we enjoy. That's the, when you're an entertainer, that's always the fun part. Everything else is kind of a job, but we're fortunate to have the jobs we do. We're fortunate to have been here as long as we have been, and that's all thanks to you guys. The community is what has kept us going. I would say that's the number one reason. Developing the friendships we have with our listeners and our auditors, with all of you, is why we're still here and why we're still doing this. Getting emails like I'm reading today is part of that. But you're why we keep doing this. And the feedback, especially the immediate feedback we see from our focus group or our auditor group, is what really makes it satisfying that some of the silly things we talk about, you guys actually resonate with. And we appreciate you listening and being here, or we wouldn't have been here this long. And the other thing, too, is we're still here doing this because you support our sponsors. You actually go out and you tell them that you heard about it on the show. That gets back to them. You know, that certainly means a lot to them. We hear about that. So that's why we're here, is you've continued to support our sponsors. Without them, we wouldn't be here either. So it is a circle, and we're really glad that you guys are still listening and hanging in there with us. I know this sounded like some cliche answers, but it is the answer to this question. And I do get asked that a lot in podcasting circles. You know, when you think about the average podcast, and this has not changed in the last 15 years, the average podcast lasts 7 episodes and then they quit because they discover it is work and it's hard to build an audience and it's hard to do all of these things. We're proud that we're probably in the top 5 longest running daily podcasts if we take out the NPRs of the world. We're in about the top 5. We're very proud of that, and we're very proud that you've been along, some of you, since the very beginning. And then finally, Jess wrote, is there anything you would have done differently over the years with the podcast that would make it easier for yourself now? Well, that's a good question. We have changed things over the years, as you know. Longtime listeners will know. We have changed with the times. Our personal times and industry times, we have changed, you know, as we stopped doing live when I got sick with cancer and it was just too hard to do it that way. So we started doing it recorded to allow some grace for me. And we discovered that the live listeners came and listened to the recorded anyway. We still record it as what we call as live. And we do the show in the morning. And we kind of do it in order so that you hear it the way we do it. There's really only 2 or 3 edits I do immediately after the show to get it out as quickly as we do. There's only a couple of edits, and usually that's when we're getting the guest on, or or one of us has to run to the bathroom. So those are the edits that we do. So there's only 2 or 3. So it makes it very easy. There's been a lot less mistakes, I think. Now I've actually had AI doing transcripts and looking for cuts that I've missed. So when we do a cut, we say cut, and we always count in with a 3-2-1. So now I can use the transcripts to have it search for any 3-2-1s, and that's why you've actually seen less mistakes over the last 6 months, I would say, because AI is helping with that, making sure. And I have, and it has found some mistakes where I missed a cut or missed an edit or missed a 3-2-1. So it helps us with that. The other thing I wish we'd done differently, Jennifer and I just talked about this the other day, is we'd done a better job. I think if we'd known we'd been around for 4,000 episodes, we would have done a better job with this, is doing tags for each episode. So just like you see tags on social media, I wish we had done tags on each episode for what each episode included. So a tag for Horse Health Heat, you know, that would be a good example for today. So I could have looked back at the tags and found the episodes easier that actually included some discussion about Horse Health Heat. So that's something we did not do from the beginning. And you don't think about those things when you're brand new, especially when we were brand new. We're just trying to figure out how to do podcasting and get it out to you guys. But you don't think about those things at the beginning, and when you get to 4,000 episodes, you wish you had. So that's a biggie. I think that we would have done much differently. Otherwise, I think we've changed and we've rolled with the punches, and we've tried to keep the show up with how listeners are listening now. So we do four or five short segments in each show. It's a reason we don't do long interviews and things like that. And we've also decreased the length of the show. People are listening to shorter shows. Now we do extras for the auditors after a lot of episodes. But that, so we have made changes as we went along because of the listening habits have changed for podcasting over the years. Well, that's it for emails. If you want to send me an email, it's Glenn with two N's at horseradionetwork.com. Jamie and I will be back on Wednesday. Get your weird news into weirdnews at horseradionetwork.com. And right after this word from Worm Flooring, Dr. Holland from Wilson College did an interview with us, and she broke down the actionable steps for horse owners to successfully manage summer heat stress. And I thought that was appropriate, seeing half the country is going to be over 100 degrees this next couple of days. Be safe out there, everybody, and we'll be back with another episode for you tomorrow. I have something special planned for you tomorrow, and then Jamie will be back on Wednesday.
Ditch the mats and upgrade to Worm Flooring Systems. Is the constant struggle with heavy rubber mats getting you down? Do you crave a more durable, easy-to-clean flooring solution for your trailer, barn, or any space, commercial or residential? Worm Flooring Systems solves your problems. Say goodbye to rubber mats and say hello to Worm Flooring Systems. No more liquid seeping through to the wood or aluminum frame. Slip-resistant grip that provides a cushion comfort, extremely durable, built to last and withstand heavy machinery and constant use. Plus, it helps insulate the trailer. Worm Flooring Systems, the perfect choice for applications all over your horse property. We eliminate rubber mats. Visit wormflooring.com to find a dealer near you.
Dr. Janice, I'm so excited to have you with us today. And, you know, all this heat talk is the perfect segue. I want to focus on managing heat, water intake, and salt intake. And this is a very timely conversation. I know Jamie was talking about this earlier this week. There's been a lot of discussion in the auditor room. And so let's kick off. Given the varying climates that horses live in, what are some of the primary signs that you look for that indicate a horse is struggling with heat stress beyond a sweaty horse?
Well, I'm always really fond of doing routine hydration status checks. So doing the skin pinches, and not just across like the shoulder or neck where we usually do, which you can also do it above the eyelid or above the eye.
Really? I never heard that one.
Yeah. Well, like in old horses, sometimes the skin, you know, we don't like to talk about it from a human standpoint, but, you know, in old horses, the skin sometimes gets a little saggy and doesn't respond as well. But above the eye, the skin's a little thinner, and it still will respond really well to a skin pinch.
I am kind of resembling that remark right now.
No. So, oh my gosh. So other things that I would do is I would check your horse's temperature, because they should, if they are well hydrated, should be able to thermoregulate and keep their body temperature down around that 99-101 level. So just like in humans, if we start to see the core body temperature getting elevated, it might be a sign the horse can't keep himself cool naturally. And then also sometimes in horses, if they are severely dehydrated, then they can't sweat. So if you think your horse should be sweating because of the temperature and he's not, then again, it becomes serious. Kind of, again, same thing with humans. They can do the, you know, same thing where we stop sweating, and that is a severe sign. We got to get the horse in, get him cooled down, call your vet.
Absolutely. And I know that's something I saw quite frequently living in Florida and riding in Florida with the heat. What are some of your strategies for encouraging water intake, especially in the summer? We're traveling, you know, we're on the trail, or when the horse might be reluctant to drink, maybe because they are so hot. Are there specific types of electrolytes or additives that you would recommend or advise against in these kinds of situations?
So, oh gosh, that's such a good question. And I always feel like horses always feel like we do the it depends response. So electrolytes can be great if your horse has sweat out a lot of the salts, because horses have what we say is hypertonic sweat, which means that it's higher in salt content than water content. So when we see like the white kind of crust form on our horses, or that foam that we talk about, that is some of the salts that the horse is losing coming out in the sweat. So I really like for my horses to have access to salt at all times, because they're pretty good at regulating what they need on their own. And then ideally, if the horses are healthy, when they take in that salt, that will trigger them to drink more water.
It's like the peanuts at the bar trick, right?
Right, yeah.
Except at the bar, we're not drinking water. So, I mean, there's that. Different kind of intake.
I have to ask, does the salt type matter? I mean, I see on Facebook everybody going from a salt block to, you know, tablespoons of iodized salt into the feed. Is there an ideal way to get your horse salt, or is it just however they'll take it?
I would say it's however they would take it. Okay. And I was just at a conference at the beginning of June with the Equine Science Society. And there's actually some recent research done on that I was able to sit in and listen to. So they had a group that had salt blocks and table, like in granular salt, and they did not find a difference in salt intake. So, you know, we always hear that maybe horses don't like salt blocks or they can't lick them. But from their study, it really didn't matter. The horses took in what they needed. And they also didn't actually see a difference in if your salt block was Himalayan or red or white or yellow or whatever other colors you have out there. The horses still just ate the same amount of salt.
That's so interesting, but proving the fact you mentioned earlier that, you know, if the horse doesn't have any, let's say, outstanding health issues, they will take what they need.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing.
It really is.
It really is. I mean, and the variation in how much salt the horses took in was also pretty crazy. So, you know, we say that we think they need this much, like I think it's like we usually talk about like 2 tablespoons a day, but some horses take in more than that, some horses take in less than that. And yeah, and as long as they're, you know, performing and doing what you need them to do, they're probably way smarter than we are about what they need.
And are there any risks if the horse will, you know, like we've seen horses that'll just stand there and lick the salt block all day, for example? What are some of the risks in over supplementation, or what are things we should look out for in that situation?
That's an excellent question. So we do have horses that they'll eat the salt if they're bored. So if they're stopped and fined and there's nothing else, they might decide to chew on that. We also have horses that are called psychogenic salt eaters. And I always just love that term because it
makes them sound crazy. Like they're cuckoo for cocoa puffs.
Yeah. But that's basically what it is. Like they just have a really, you know, they will just eat salt as long as it's present.
It's tough to bite your fingernails when you're a horse. So, I mean,
there you
gotta do something.
I'd be impressed if they could do that. So those horses, if you have one that eats just excessive amounts of salt, then you would have to remove the salt block and kind of regulate what they take in. And always have fresh water available, because if the horses have water available and drink it, they will flush the extra salt out of their body. It'll make your stall pretty nasty, but they will pee it all out along with that extra water. If they don't, then we do have to worry about that we're going to throw off the electrolyte balance inside the body and can cause problems with muscle function and system function.
What are some other proactive management strategies that you find to be the most effective in preventing heat-related illnesses during these hot, hot summer months?
Oh, there are so many things that we could try and do. So, again, it's crazy. Like, I always think about these poor animals, you know, they're basically wearing a fur coat at all times. So from a management standpoint, if we can get them to carry less body fat, so they're a little bit leaner on the body condition, they can thermoregulate better because they'll be able to get the blood vessels to the skin surface. And that's one of the ways that they cool themselves, is they push blood flow out to the skin. The air blows across their bodies and that helps to cool the blood, and then it cools the body. So if they're a little bit if they're carrying a little bit of extra fat cover, they can't do that as well. I also am a big fan, if you can figure out how to ride your horses, if you're working them in the cooler parts of the day, so sure. Earlier in the morning, late at night. I know in Texas, I had some friends here. They're like, yeah, we have to ride at 2 a.m. So that we're
that's
in
dedication.
Bless America, is, my God!
Right, I'm like that. That definitely changes your daily.
So, wow.
But yeah, you know, but it's, you know, it's 120 degrees or something, so they're not they don't want to ride in that. And I also I like the idea of if we can hose them off, and like even, you know, if you're out on the trails, if you can in some way have a sponge, and if you're, you know, going by water sources and can dip the sponge and kind of squeeze that off over the horse while you're out, that will also help them, because again, the skin will get wet, the wind will hit it'll help cool them. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen, I'm always amazed whenever I watch, in particular endurance rides, you know, when those horses come into the vet checks, they just have buckets and buckets of water and just throw it on the horses to try and help cool them out before they go back out on the ride.
Yeah. So I think that's good for, you know, getting people started and at least thinking about what they have to do as far as salt's concerned. Was there anything else? You were at the Equine Science Society Summit. What was there one other thing that really stood out to you that you went, that's something I hadn't thought about, or wow, that's cool research. Was there one thing that popped out?
Oh, gosh. There are so many things, Glenn. So, but let me see. I actually did mark a couple of the abstracts that I thought were pretty cool. So they did have a group that actually is out of Florida, and they were trying to do soaking of feed to try and increase water intake. And what I thought was kind of interesting was that they said that, like, initially it worked really well, but they said that they didn't think it actually, like, long-term increased overall water intake. So at some point when the horses, even if you had the feed soaked, if they got to a point where they were well hydrated, they weren't going to take in more water just because it was in the feed. Mm. Like, they would just start drinking less. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Because, again, it goes a little bit against, so, you know, as I said, like cold weather, which we're not necessarily talking about, that could be a great way to get water into them. But that, you know, horses, again, they kind of regulate what they need.
Interesting. You know, yeah. Dr. Janice, the Equine Society, the Equine Science Society Summit, it sounds like a nightmare for a horse husband like me. I got to tell you, that's some deep stuff you get into there.
I mean, it is. It was pretty amazing. I'm part of the student competition committee. So we had 75 graduate and undergraduate students from around the world who presented work, and then had faculty and companies that presented their research as well. It meets every 2 years, and it's always a good learning environment.
Terrific. Was there one of the students, I hate to do this to you, you don't have to mention names, but was there one of their findings that you found, you know, that was very creative or interesting?
Yeah, there was a school that they actually were doing some work with, again, it relates to heat, but they were doing some work with having shelters out in paddocks and whether or not the horses use them more in hot weather. And it was kind of interesting because, like, they had wet globe thermometers, and they basically had GPS tracking on these horses to figure out, you know, were they under the shelter, were they out in the open, and like correlated it with the weather and the temperature and the time of day. Like, it was, I was just amazed. I was like, wow, that's a lot of equipment to pull this work out. So that was pretty cool. Like, it has definitely changed since since I was packing horses out in pastures for sure.
You know, it's because the horses never seem to be in the shelter when it's pouring and hailing. They're always standing outside, you know, and never under the roof, right? For some reason. I don't know why.
No, yeah, like that is so true.
And the other thing Ashley and I were talking about it before we started today. Our horses, they each have a fan, you know, at the gate in their stall. And I'll tell you what, they become addicted to those fans. When they start to get warm, they come in and stand in front of that fan. If that fan isn't on, they get mad. I mean, they want that fan on. It's an addiction. Oh, yeah. It really is.
I mean, it really is. And I mean, and it really is. That is the main way that they thermoregulate is getting, you know, yeah, getting blood to the skin and then standing in the breeze and cooling themselves off.
Well, and I think too, it keeps the bugs off. That helps too. You know,
that, yes, yeah, that is for sure.
Because the gnats this year in Florida have been, oh God, the gnats have been awful.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have big bugs in Florida.
Yeah, we have all the bugs. I just read that there's two really bad kinds of termites, and now they're crossbreeding to make what they're calling the extreme termite.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So apparently the extreme termite is resistant to all the termite treatments that we currently have, and they have to come up with a new termite treatment so they can charge you thousands of dollars to save your house. So
what you're saying is we need to get Florida into the termite business.
Gosh. Welcome to Florida. You go enjoy the rest of your vacation out on the lake there. Dr. Janice from Wilson College, we really appreciate you stopping by like you do, and we always look forward to having you.
Yeah, enjoy doing it. Thank you guys so much.